Okay, listen. Well, welcome to the first of what's going to be a series, a regular series, we hope, of classic rock website podcasts, where we're just going to talk a lot of nonsense. And we're delighted to say Jeff Barton and Malcolm Dome, that's me, we're going to be here regularly. But talking of nonsense, we are joined today by Xavier Russell, who is known as the Baron of Bollocks.
No questions.
Marvellous to be here.
Yes. And we thought we'd kick this off by talking about Ronnie James Dio's sad death and the implications it has for the entire classic rock family, as it were. So, I mean, what did you feel, Xavier, about not just personally Ronnie's death, but the way it actually has taken hold of everybody, saying it's the first of so many we're unfortunately going to lose now?
Yeah, well, I've met Ronnie a few times. Lovely bloke, great man. And first saw him with Elf, like everyone else, like Lars and all those people. And it was so, I was like shocked when I heard he died. I know he'd been ill. And the first time I met him, all he talked about was curry. Yeah. And it was on his rider. But it's, again, it's had the implication on the festival that's coming up at Victoria Park.
Yeah, High Voltage.
High Voltage. He was supposed to be on that. Now, do they carry on? Who replaces him? And he's like a legend. Could they still play without him?
What, in heaven and hell?
Yeah. I doubt it very much, don't you? Yeah. The weird thing is that I was, when the news of his death broke, it was on a Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah, Sunday night.
You were at church, Jeff?
I was in Somerset, and I got a text from Sean Llewellyn, who's the editor at Classic Rock, saying, can you get something up on the website? And I could barely get a mobile phone signal. I was leaning out my window.
Somerset boy, yeah.
And so we didn't actually get the news, unfortunately, until sort of a few hours after it.
First thing Monday morning.
But it was a funny old feeling because Dio's sort of been part of the fabric of rock and metal for so long. I mean, allegedly he was, what, 67?
Yeah.
And I think he was probably in his early 70s.
Most people reckon that might be a professional age, but it makes what he did even more remarkable.
But it's strange because the last time I met him was at Sweden Rock last year, and it was a strange encounter because it was absolutely plastered, this was the day before he was due to go on stage with Heaven and Hell, one of the headlining acts, and he was in the bar and he was absolutely reeling.
What was he drinking?
I think he was just drinking bitter or something.
Yeah, he liked a nice pint of bitter, didn't he?
Can you get bitter in Sweden? Obviously you can.
You can, yeah. Yes.
And,
but it's Dave Constable.
I went up to him because I interviewed him back in 75, 76 when he first joined Rainbow with Blackmore in the Swiss Cottage Holiday Inn.
That famous place.
And anyway, I went up to him and he sort of looked at me through his hazy eyes. He said, "Hello, mate. I've just been for fish and chips."
So this was pre-curry days.
This was in Sweden. Yeah, fish and chips in Sweden.
This was in Sweden last year.
How weird.
Yeah, this was in a place called Kristianstad, and I don't think they're renowned for their fish and chip shops.
Was it on the coast, though?
Yes.
Yeah. Fresh fish.
I mean, it was very convivial, but I did kind of think, you know...
Do you think it's on the way out?
Well, you don't think that, do you?
It was strange because it wasn't really... It wasn't, without wishing to, you know, get into the nuts and bolts of it, he wasn't quite the Dio that I remembered. And in fact, the next day when Heaven and Hell played, it was a bit disappointing, to be honest. You know, he didn't seem to have quite that verve and vigour that he used to have. And I think one of our guys had either talked to Geezer Butler or had talked to his wife, Gloria, recently. And she said that Dio had actually been complaining about stomach pains.
Yeah, that was talking to Geezer. And apparently he spent last summer constantly going on about how stomach is a problem. Yeah. And apparently he had a history of hypochondria. So everybody said, just get on with it, shut up. But of course then he had it checked out and they realised it was a serious problem. But it was something that Jerry Ewing, our mutual friend and also colleague on Classic Rock, said, that made you realise that we are in an interesting era. Because you said, we're going to have to get used to this happening more and more regularly because of the age of these people. Mm. You know, you almost take it for granted, Lemmy's mid-60s, Ozzy's mid-60s, Tony Iommi, or Richie Blackmore, 65 recently.
Right. None of them act it, though.
But also, when you think there's been a real raft of very sad deaths very recently. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about Peter Steele from Tybo Angs. He was what? Late 40s?
Mid-40s.
Vinny Chaz, out of Pretty Boy Floyd. I mean, you know, not necessarily the biggest name in the world.
Yeah, but still. Yeah.
You know, still relatively
absolutely
young.
Absolutely, yeah.
Guy out of Slipknot.
Yeah, Paul Gray.
Paul Gray just died, 38.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, we're not talking about the Methuselahs, are we?
No, true. But I don't know, there's always something about the younger people dying. It's almost like it's part of the rock and roll mythology.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But those are not natural causes. Well, some of them are, obviously, but brought on by a lifestyle. And people almost take it as part of, that's what happens with rock and rollers. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they pass away through excesses.
You're but talking about old age, maybe.
But now we're talking about...
Yeah, but then again, we go back to like the 70s. A lot happened at the same time. They did Bond dying.
Yeah,
and then
John Bonham.
The Skinner plane crash. Mm-hmm. I remember being in Paris when I found out about that. I just went in and got absolutely paralytic.
Well, quite right, yeah.
But just saying, each era seems to have this same thing where you get a group of deaths. It's very odd how they all sort of come in.
But I think Malcolm's absolutely right. It's not really to do with Dio's lifestyle or anything. It's just the fact that basically he conked out,
didn't he?
And that doesn't really happen. Well, it hasn't happened historically.
Not for a long
time. Too often, apart from the really old kind of rock and rollers.
But now it is going to start happening more and more because you know, even if you're talking about people into their 70s and 80s, they're fast approaching that age.
Mm.
And, you know, we've got the Stones are all around that 70 mark.
Yeah, but they'll go until they're 100.
Yeah, probably will. Keith Richards probably will. Yeah,
but I think that's the thing, though, isn't it? Yeah, people like Lemmy and Keith Richards, you think of as indestructible.
Yeah,
you?
Yes,
you can't imagine
them dying,
not being around. That's the incredible thing. And obviously, you know, mortality is something that will actually rear its head at some point for us as well as everybody else.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I think, funnily enough, on the journalist side, we've been comparatively lucky down the years. I mean, obviously, there have been a few sad ones. Mark Butterford, Carol Clarke most recently.
You remember Paul Miller as well?
Paul Miller,
Freelance and Crank got
hit
by a bus.
Yes,
hit
by a bus. Yeah,
so did Johnny Waller, actually, on sound.
Johnny Waller, another one. But there have been very few here and there.
Mm.
I mean, most of us, fortunately, are still around.
Yes.
But even we're reaching that age where it's going to, unfortunately, eventually catch up with us.
Chris Welch still around?
Chris Welch is still around. Yeah, yeah. He's fine, yes, okay. But the thing is, with these iconic people, they're not going to be replaced. It's not as if we've got a younger generation of characters coming through who will just step into their shoes and carry on. Whereas in the 60s and 70s, it was happening. That you had a series of characters.
They were replenishing.
In a way it was. I mean, you suddenly had a David Lee Roth appearing at the end of the 70s. Mm-hmm. So you had those characters coming through. Bruce Dickinson, early 80s. Now, some great bands making tremendous music. But is there anybody who's going to step up to the plate and become the next iconic generation?
Well, you've got all those clone ones as well. Like The Journey has a guy that sounds like...
Yeah.
That's the only other way they seem to get around it these days. There isn't anyone to replace what is the god, really.
No, I think you're right. Or the duck. With all due respect to Steve Perry.
Yeah.
No, but that's the case, isn't it? That we aren't going to replace these people. So what does that mean for the future of rock music?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting point I was thinking the other day. If you said next year to Sonosur and Download, right, you can't have anyone on the bill that's more than 15 years old as a band. Mm-hmm. What are they going to do? I think they'd have a real problem.
They certainly would, I mean, I think to a certain extent they've already sort of faced up to that. Because if you look at the headliners, that's absolutely great. But then you look down the bill and you think, well, hang on a minute, you know, this is... obviously, as you rightly said, Malcolm, you know, we're no spring chickens anymore. But a lot of those bands, I kind of think, do they really deserve to be there?
Yeah, you're right.
Enough to be at that particular level, you know.
No, it's a fair point. And you look at the headliners, DC, Aerosmith, been going since for 35 years plus.
Yeah.
Rage Against the Machine, even they go back a hell of a long way now, more than 20 years.
Well, I remember we used to do we did Rage covers on Kerrang!
in
the early 90s, very much so.
So they're a 20 year plus.
Yeah.
And then as Sonic, Alice Cooper, Iron Maiden, and Rammstein. And Rammstein again are in that 20 year mark. So these aren't younger bands coming through. And you do wonder, is anyone going to step up that's going to fill those gaps? And can't see it.
No.
Yeah, and it's tough also as far as the magazine Classic Rock is concerned because, we'd like to put new guys on the cover. And quite often our publisher says to us, look, you know, let's do a new band on the cover, you know. So, for example, we've done Them Crooked Vultures.
John Paul Jones, Dave Grohl and... Josh Homme.
Bit of a compromise, obviously.
Yeah.
But we couldn't do Airborne. We just couldn't physically do it, unfortunately.
The days when we used to Kerrang! Have Poison on the cover, GNR, Bon Jovi, Metallica, Slayer, all bands in their formative years.
Yes.
But it worked because people associated with those characters, and it's not the same.
Yeah, things have moved on, haven't they? I don't know. I mean, I think you know, well, we were all on Kerrang, obviously, and we were very much into risk taking.
Yes, you're right.
You know, we did the RPLA thing. But this that was true. A risk, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Some risks worked, and others
didn't. To haunt me,
yeah. But the thing is, it's always worth taking a risk, because had we not taken the risk with Guns N' Roses, for instance, or Bon Jovi,
that's right,
then we would have been left behind. And it's part of what made Kerrang what it was in those times, was that we covered bands first, and we said, oh, the hell with it, let's put it on the cover. But that's of course, like, there was less
Metallica
competition.
As well,
Metallica, Slayer. Yeah. All those bands got their first real break, as far as probably European press goes, through Kerrang. In fact, probably the first real break, full stop. But it's a different era then, because we didn't have the rivals. We were almost in a sort of group of one.
Yeah, and the metal wasn't the huge industry it's become today. It was very much a sort of, you know, little cottage thing, wasn't it?
It was, absolutely. We were left alone most of the time.
Yes, we were.
Oh, you like that funny music.
Yeah. We were the people pushed further and further around Greater London House. No one actually took us seriously, really, until someone suddenly saw how much money Kerrang was generating, and then they had to get involved.
Exactly, that's right.
And suddenly fortnightly became weekly, and it's about generating the cash. But now, of course, it's a very different era now, and magazines are struggling like everyone else in an economic climate. It's very tough. I think Future are lucky, because obviously the three magazines, Classic Rock, Hammer and Prog, are all very niche and very well established as being the best in their niche.
I mean, it was funny, actually, because when Dio died, you know, we did have quite a serious discussion about whether to put him on the cover or not. Because on the one hand, you've got your publishing hat on, think, you know, cruelly or not, you know, will this actually sell magazines, you know? But at the end of the day, we kind of thought, well, you know, we're Classic Rock, you know, we've got to do it.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to do Dio on the cover. Yeah. And also, I think as a reaction to that, there's been very little recognition of Dio in the mainstream media.
Yeah.
Daily Telegraph did a very good obit on him.
Did they?
Yeah, they did.
Very, very good.
And it was very full.
Very accurate. Right. Gave his real name.
Really? Yeah. I think that was a rarity, though.
Yeah, it is rare.
I mean, if you think of his peers in, say, opera or, you know, jazz, you know, folk music, any field of music, I think, you know, whether it had been Richard Thompson, you know, I don't know, John McLaughlin.
Yeah, or anything,
whatever,
yeah.
You know. But I think they would have enjoyed much more of a media splash than Ronnie did, you know.
I think you're right.
Disappointing, wasn't it?
I think Ronnie was very much part of the metal family, and most people outside of metal barely registered who he was.
Yeah.
Sadly, because the guy was such an enormous talent, but he didn't cross over to a huge generation of people who, oh yeah, Rainbow, right, they had pop hits since you've been gone. Yeah, but that's not him. Yeah. You know, that's the point.
Yeah. Maybe if Butterfly Ball had enjoyed a Western revival or something, you know.
Yeah, maybe Butterfly Ball had happened. Who knows? He might be flying high with lots of people recognising Ronnie for what he was and what he is.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, the outpouring from the whole metal community proved he did transcend generations. It wasn't as if it was just people who were contemporaries or near contemporaries. A lot of younger bands have actually grown up with him, and it is strange to think we're not going to see him again on stage.
We're not going to talk to him again. That's the hard thing to visualize, isn't it? It really is.
I mean, what you might get now is a load of younger bands maybe doing tribute cover versions and things like that, so you get to hear his voice through another voice, if you see
it reinterpreted.
But whether that's a
We've got the guy out of Masterplan doing that already.
Jorn Lander, Dio. I mean, apparently he started it a while back, but I mean, there is something. Had it come out and people, right, we're putting it out now and we're going to give at least a percentage to cancer research.
That would have been good.
All right. There's no sign of it. So it's whether Jorn Lander's gone along with it or not, the fact is it looks like a bit of a shoddy cash in by Frontiers Records. It looks, it may not be, and it may be that they are going to turn around and say, we're doing it to raise money for Ronnie or for charity. But at the moment, there's that question mark, which is a little disappointing. But I mean, the other thing, of course, as you said, what are Heaven and Hell going to do now?
Yeah.
I mean, are they going to try and do some form of Ronnie tribute gig with various different singers? I don't know. I mean, you can't see Heaven and Hell having any sort of future.
No, not at all. I mean, it does raise the specter of Sabbath again.
Yes, it does.
In fact, I had a brief chat with Ozzy for Metal Hammer the other week, and raised that subject with him. And it was, you know, Dio hadn't died at that point, but it was obvious that, you know, he was in a pretty bad way. And Ozzy didn't rule it out, although he did say that he would only do it if the three of them were involved, i.e. Bill Ward, along with Tony and Geezer.
Yeah.
The three originals plus himself. But he didn't rule it out, but he did say that he thinks they should do an album, and you know, if it's nowhere near as good as what they used to do, then, you know, you shouldn't bother, because I think they did try and do an album.
Yeah, they did, and it didn't work.
So I don't know, maybe it's all pie in the sky.
Well, one of the more interesting things is I did hear part of an Aussie interview is going out on Total Rock, in which he talks about his next tour, and he wants to do Sabbath songs that haven't been done live for years. And then I thought back to what Geezer and Tony have been saying for ages, is one of the problems they've had with touring with Ozzy is that he won't do anything different. It all comes back down to the same set list.
Yes. Yeah.
And they come in with ideas, what about this, what about that, why don't we try something different? And Ozzy dismisses it all. Now he's the one saying, I want to do some different songs.
Interesting. I think he is. I think now more than ever, you know, having talked to him recently, he is more conscious of his roots than he has been for ages. And I get the feeling that he's finally beginning to flex his muscles and you know, get away from the big kind of, you know, Sharon influence. I don't know. I did get that impression. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But I think he seems to be quite insistent that, for example, the new album, I think, is pretty good.
I've only heard the one track so far. But
I think I've heard about half a dozen tracks, and it's pretty strong.
Good.
And he's worked on it for 18 months.
Yeah.
You know, in his home studio with, who's the producer, Mel?
Cherko, isn't it?
Kevin Cherko.
Kevin Cherko, that's it.
Apparently he's a bit of a Mutt Langer.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I've heard. Yeah. He's a bit like that.
He apparently said to Ozzy, how do you like your cymbals? Do you like to go ka-chill, swish, or bonk?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just a fucking cymbal.
It's a cymbal, Hit it.
But I think, you know, it sounds like quite a crafted album. Maybe that'll bring that sort of bumbling Osborne's buffoon, you know, to the background a bit.
I wonder whether this is fortuitous or planned. He's come out of his comfort zone because Zach's no longer there.
Yes.
Gus Chee is now on guitar. Mike Borden's not on the album. Another drummer's in. So the comfort zone's gone for him in a way. Now, whether that's deliberate or it's just the way it's happened, it might wake him up to thinking, oh, the edge is back, the challenge is back. Working with new people.
He did say that he thought that Ozzy was becoming too much like Black Label with Zach in the band. And he put off, actually, not sacking Zach, parting company with Zach for 2 or 3 years before getting Gus G in. And I think there was one instance, probably on the last tour, where Black Label Society were opening for Ozzy.
Yes.
And then Zach
was getting up and doing.
And I think that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back, really. So it's interesting, you know, it's interesting that you sort of realise that, you know, because you often, you know, you wonder about his thought process.
Well, you do. Yeah, you do.
Has Ozzy been approached to do Heaven and Hell?
Oh, I don't think he'd do it in a million years. I don't think he could do those songs. B, I don't think he'd want to do those songs.
No. Well, it's like the Armored Saint discussion that we had on the website about the three different singers.
Yeah. Well, no, Anthrax.
Yeah.
That sort of. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's a different era. And it's not as if Ozzy has ever done era songs. He concentrates very much on the 70s Sabbath, as he should. That's what people want to hear. They don't want to hear him do Children of the Sea. They'd like to hear him do Children of the Grave.
I'd like to hear him do Children of the Sea. That'd be interesting.
I think you're in a minority there somehow. I really can't see it ever happening. No. But I can see Heaven and Hell maybe doing a tribute benefit gig.
Yeah.
And getting a load of Tony the Cat Martin, maybe.
Yep.
Even maybe someone like Jolene.
David Donato.
David Donato, yes. Yeah. Bring back David Donut. Yeah. God, that would be funny. Jorn Lander.
Well, to be honest with you, you know, if you look at Sabbath's checkered history, they have made some horrendous mistakes down
here. Oh, God,
anything could happen.
Anything is possible. Yeah. My goodness, Ian Gillan.
Oh, no.
I mean, Sabbath's history is remarkably checkered. But, I mean, I'd love to see Sabbath do one last tour with Ozzy and do an interesting set list, go out on top, end it by saying, right, never again.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is a year maybe to do it around this year, because 40th anniversary of the first album, which most people would regard as the birth of heavy metal, the real birth.
Yeah.
Even though there were albums before which were very much of that style, but you know, the first Black Sabbath album is regarded as the blueprint. And
absolutely, yeah.
I think you're right, Jeff. I think Ozzy's got back that fondness for that history.
I think he has, yeah. I think it was also interesting because his previous album, Black Rain, I went to the launch of that, and it was a very highfalutin affair. It was held in Abbey Road Studios.
Right.
And I was about the only sort of kind of rock press person there. The rest of them were like, you know, Fleet Street suits.
Yeah,
and all that.
Yeah.
It was all very rarefied, and Ozzy came in with Sharon, and they were all dressed in their Armani gear. You know? and it wasn't... Although I thought the album was good, to be honest with you.
I like
it. But, you know, the way they were trying to twist it didn't really seem... media-wise, to be pitched particularly at the rock end of the spectrum, whereas this time around, you know, they actively sort of courted Metal Hammer, and we got a big photo session out of it and everything. So maybe it is a sign of things like, you know, going back in the old direction.
I think most Aussie fans would love to see that happen. I mean, that's one of the things about Aussie, was for all the reality TV stuff and the mainstream stuff, he's still loved by metal fans. That's never diminished. And I think, if anything, they'll blame Sharon, rightly or wrongly. And I think there's still an element with Sharon where she keeps him working. Because if he doesn't work, what's he going to do?
Then
probably turn back to the drink and the drugs.
Yeah.
And she probably knows that. So he keeps him working in order to keep him active.
Yes.
And he clearly still loves making music.
Yeah, for sure. To work on, as I say, to work on an album for a year and a half.
Yes.
You know, some dedication, really, isn't it? Not just to, I mean, you remember that awful covers album he did?
Oh, yes. Terrible.
Yeah, at least he's moved on from that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank goodness. Yeah, that wasn't one of the high spots of his career at all. But there again, when Ozzy's one of those characters that we come back to, Lemmy's another one, that are always going to be loved and a huge affection in the world of rock and metal for those sort of people.
Yeah.
Because not just of what they've done, but for the fact they're still around and they haven't really embarrassed themselves particularly. Yeah, they made mistakes. Everybody does. But still, overall, they're looked up to by the current younger generation as being people who deserve their affection and respect and their worship, for want of a better word.
Yeah, and irreplaceable, as you said, about to return to the theme, eh?
Yes.
Yeah. Could you see Ozzy doing an Exile on Main Street? Because, you know, they remixed that and got some new songs on it. You could go back and revisit the first four Black Sabbath albums. Mm.
Oh, Black Sabbath.
So I'm talking about Ozzy.
I think Ozzy's solo stuff is underrated, actually.
Yes, I agree. I think it's some tremendous stuff.
Yeah.
Well, the Sabbath stuff's already been done. There's been a constant reissue
Of
Sabbath. And the first two Ozzy albums are being reissued now, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're doing is putting Bob Daisley and Lee Kerslake back in. Because there was that controversy a few years ago when Daisley and Kerslake sued, claiming they were owed royalties. Sharon counteracted by saying, I'm taking both off the album. So Mike Borden did the drums and Robert Trujillo, now with Metallica, of course, came in and did the bass. So they redid the rhythm section, which was pretty disgraceful, actually.
Mm. Vindictive.
Yes. Vindictive is definitely the word.
Yeah.
But now what they're doing with these reissues and the repackaging, they're putting those originals back in, which I think most Aussie fans would want.
Yeah, definitely. The return of the Daisley.
Yes, Lee Kerslake and Bob Daisley are back. You never know, there might be some sort of, I don't know, kiss and make-ups being too extreme, but maybe an acceptance by the Osborne camp that actually Daisley and Kerslake were part of that era.
Mm.
They're on those first two albums. Mm. I mean, everyone talks about Randy Rhoads, quite rightly. And Ozzy's been, down the years, really lucky. He's worked with some great guitarists. And you think about Randy Rhoads, Jakey Lee, Zakk Wylde. Obviously Tony Iommi before that, Bernie Torme,
Brad Gillis,
yeah.
Night Ranger.
Yeah, because Bernie and Brad briefly took over live when Randy Rhoads was killed.
Yeah. And don't forget bass players, Don Costa.
Don Costa, yes. Whatever happened to Don Costa?
Oh, he's the shredder guy.
Yeah.
He used to cut his hand with a shredder.
Yeah. Became a close personal friend of Dan Tabinuto.
Oh, we won't go there.
Yeah, let's not go there. Well, I'd love to know what happened to Don Costa. Yeah. Where is he?
Probably on a cheese grater.
So if anyone out there knows, please let us know.
You'll have to go on a mission, Malk.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to find it. But where's if anyone out there knows, let us know through the Classic Rock website.
Absolutely. Don Costa, are you out there?
Yeah, are you out? What are you doing these days? Are you alive? My guess is if he's alive, he's either in porn or he's become a real estate agent.
Or he works
one of those two, or both.
In a slaughterhouse.
Yeah. I mean, there was one strange character.
I remember seeing him actually hit that shredder on the back of his bass.
I never saw him live with Ozzy.
Oh, yes.
He never came over here with Ozzy, did he?
No, I saw him in America with Ozzy.
Yeah.
And I saw Randy Rhoads literally just before he died at A Day on the Green.
Did you?
Yeah. Wow. Triumph. Well, they were under Triumph. It was a Journey headline, Day on the Green.
Right, oh, well, it would be, yeah.
And Cheap Trick and Molly Hatchet, of course.
Damn fine bill, has to be said.
And Ozzy opened.
Yeah, but in those days, he wasn't that big in America.
Nothing. I think it was still called Blizzard of Oz back then.
It was, yeah. It would have been in those days with Randy Rhoads. And you saw... Don Costa must have been later.
Yeah, no, I saw it. It was later in America, I saw that one.
So
he had this cheese grater on the back of the bass. And he just used to hit it, and it's just like shredded skin. I mean, just like sick.
And he'd hold it out to girls in the audience to lick it, wouldn't he?
Something like that.
Allegedly. according to Dante, anyway. I mean, there was a definite character. But we need people like that back in rock and roll somewhere.
Well, we've covered a lot of bases, haven't we, in the first...
And bassists.
Bassists.
Well, you have, absolutely.
Joey DeMeo.
Joey DeMeo, another character worth talking about one day, definitely.
Yeah. Well, we've got endless tales for you, chaps. So
absolutely.
Keep tuning in, yeah.
Indeed, and any comments, go through the Classic Rock website. Anything you want us to talk about, any criticisms you got, as long as they're nice, let us know.
And we should bring Xavier in, definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah, always worth having the Baron around.
I'll do another one.
And
the skull there.
And the skull, which you can't see because obviously this is audio. But there is a skull, which is actually a candle. So it's a wax skull, which sounds like the title of some sort of obscure Black Sabbath tribute band. I suppose at this point we should end it. Say thank you for listening, and we'll be back with you very soon.
See you next time.
Indeed.
See you. Bye.